Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is May 13?
Oh, I don't even know. Hold on. Yes, 13.
Yeah. I nailed it. Can't even believe it. I totally guessed. I mean, I feel good that like so many people are kind of in my boat now that don't know the day and the date no more. Because it's all Groundhog Day. You know what I'm saying? So much stuff.
I read a perfect description, which was like every day is today. There's no tomorrow. Like there's only, yeah. Every day is today. It's only present. There's no future.
And yeah, because you ain't planning for nothing. And then, oh, next weekend I'm going here, or in 2 weeks I'm going there, or I got a, you know, an engagement on Wednesday. Nah, you be in the house. You know what I'm saying? You be in the crib.
Scheduling is when I'm eating out.
Exactly. When I'm going to the grocery store. That's my fun time. When I'm riding my bike and when I'm going to the
market. I went for my neighbors the other day. I meant to send y'all the Word document.
Did they ease up on the grocery list or not?
Nah, he listen, man. Bruce put his motherfucking foot to the pedal on me.
He turned it up.
He raised the stakes. He said, "Oh, you could do that? Hold on, we up in the ante, baby."
Wow. God bless Mr. Bruce.
It's all good. I've for those that don't know, I don't know if I mentioned it. I have a I don't want to call them an elderly couple, but they really are elderly couple. Mm-hmm. That live in my neighborhood. I've known the wife for years. She's, you know, sat at my dining room table during, you know, neighborhood meetings, right? So she, you know, they, you know, needed someone to go to the grocery store. They were terrified. So, you know, this was kind of early on, and I was in my Good Samaritan mode, and he hit me with a list. And he was like, "Hey, can you go to this grocery store?" Which is a little out the way, but I said, "All right, no, it's all right. I'm going to do it. I'm in a giving spirit right now."
Yeah, exactly.
And my man's list has been getting exponentially larger.
And more detailed.
Oh, I'm going to the pharmacy now, baby.
Oh, wow.
Oh, they waiting for me.
Why are you out there? Also,
bruh, the package, the pharmacy shit was already backed up.
Yeah.
Waiting for me.
Like,
all
yeah.
of the specifics.
So, make sure they give you the 5 milligram and not that 10 milligram.
Yeah, one dude was like, "Oh, he said you was gonna be here at 8 o'clock." I said,
"A.M.?"
I said, "Man, I don't go to the grocery store." I said, "I don't go to the grocery store 8 a.m. for me."
Exactly.
8 a.m. No, I think he was just saying that as a way to get them to have the stuff ready for when I.
Oh yeah, you get to when you go, they can just grab it and go.
Okie doke. Yeah.
Yeah. God bless Mr. Bruce. God bless you, Mr. Bruce. And good luck to you. What's his wife's name?
Joan.
Mr. Bruce and Miss Joan.
Yeah, Miss Joan. She do her walk by my house every morning.
Exactly. Waving to the kids. How y'all doing, though, man? How y'all dealing with all this foolishness? Well, I ain't gonna call it foolishness. It's craziness.
I mean, my goal now is that I've said this for probably a solid month, but I really mean this now. I have got to focus back on taking care of myself, which I haven't been doing during this. I stopped eating as badly as I was the first couple of weeks. Because the first couple of weeks,
everybody ate shit the first couple.
Yeah,
weeks.
The first couple of weeks it was like I was acting like it was an extended holiday break. So I stopped that, even though I'm so tired of cooking. Like I'm so tired of cooking. Yeah. So it's almost like I'm not eating as much trash, but I'm still not eating as well as I could because I'm just tired of cooking. So it's like, let me grab some cheese and crackers. Let me, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, you're noshing on a bunch.
Yeah,
of
I'm noshing all the time. I'm also tired because like sleep schedule is just.
Yeah. What's a sleep schedule? What's that?
And all also, like, even on the tip, I don't know if, maybe, come on, you haven't experienced this because you're, like, the boss, but people, because time is so fluid, people feel, and we already work in a business where people don't monitor time parameters anyway, but people feel even more entitled to your time right now.
They like, call you whenever.
Motherfuckers be like, can you get on a Zoom on, like, Sunday? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
At, like, at, like, 8:30. And like, nigga, what?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like. Or even like somebody hit me at 6 to be like, can you do a Zoom? At not, why would, why? You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Then, I mean, that, even that in and of itself is annoying and exhausting.
Well, let me ask you a quick question about the Zoom shit. Do you find that most of these Zoom calls are productive?
I will say this. Depending on what the conversation is, being able to actually have face-to-face interaction with people is sometimes helpful, depending on what you're talking about.
Yes.
But everything does not
require a Zoom.
Because I will say, for me, if it's going to be a long conversation, I'm better on a Zoom. Because if I'm on the phone, I'll start scrolling Twitter and do so. Like, my attention.
You get distracted. Yeah,
yeah, I get distracted. I'll stop listening. If it's going to be a detailed conversation with a lot of moving parts, then yeah, I think a Zoom is helpful. If it is, I'll put it this way. If it's a meeting that if things were operating normally, you would have taken in person, then I think a Zoom makes sense. If it is a conversation that you normally would have just done a conference call for, then just do a call. Like,
yeah, I feel like the Zoom,
see each other all the time.
I think there are some pluses to the Zoom. Like you said, being able to see each other, talk to people directly, that's a plus. But I think the Zoom, and you know, I'm not even gonna say it's, I'm not trying to say it's to be like negative, whatever. But I think the Zoom is almost kind of like, in a lot of cases, almost like a busy work. It's like people just need some type of interaction with other people, so they just do a Zoom because I could see people and talk to people. And
I agree with that.
You know what I'm saying? Because some of the time, like Zoom, like even I know some Zoom. What do they call it? Zoom conferences, I guess, for lack of a better term. Like when they do the verses things, right? And they'd be like, yo, we're going to Zoom them for the verses. And I tried to do it when they did Face and Teddy. And I was like, I can't hear shit. Because all you niggas are talking. I can't hear what Teddy's saying or playing or Facebook. Because it's like 25 people on here. And people are talking and stuff going on in the background. I'm like, why? How was this? I clicked off. I'm like, this ain't entertaining. I can't. And I got invited to do another Zoom for Sunday Pass with Jill and Erica, which we'll talk about. And I was like, no, because I won't be able to hear what the fuck they're talking about because I'll be listening to y'all. Everybody got comments and shit. So I'm just saying, I think the Zoom is just is replaced, obviously, human interaction. And that's important. But some of the time, I'm just like, nigga, we ain't got this. People are like, you had like 5 Zoom calls today. I was like, I bet 3 of the motherfuckers was unnecessary.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, people got to justify their paycheck.
Yeah, that too.
That's really what that's ultimately what it is. And so yes, there is some level of make busy work. I found them to be, I treat them like conference calls. I don't go on the video.
Oh,
I don't,
okay.
I don't be all in the video.
On the video,
dancing.
Dance, yeah.
So you know, I chime in if I need to. I don't really, you know. So it, to me, it's inconsequential. I don't. You know, see it as a big deal. I also don't have to join every Zoom that there is. But yes, I do think that there's a level of make busy work out there. I find that the calls are a little more concise, though.
Mm.
They move a little swifter.
Because you can see each other and, like, gauge response and stuff like that? Yeah.
Yes, yes. So you know, asking a question and seeing a person, you know, you can kind of tell if you're hitting it out the park or not. Mm-hmm. Or you can, you know what I mean? You can kind of know how to direct the conversation. So I found that they've been productive in that way. And you know, you leave with your action items. Hey, you're going to do this. You're going to do that. You know.
That's all I'm saying. I think if it was a meeting that you would normally do in person. So like, for example, with the artist I manage, whenever possible, I get on Zoom with her because it's easier to read her tone and it's easier to communicate with her when she can see me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So whereas when she's on the phone, her tone can be distracted, or I know that sometimes she might not be processing everything that's being said to her. So it's almost easier if you can, you know, see people in the eyeball, so to speak, to be able to make sure they heard what you were talking about. And then, like Sean said, like your point comes across, instead of getting off a call and feeling like everybody's been communicating and then find out that actually y'all were on different pages.
Y'all were on the same page. Okay. I mean, I just want to kind of bring that out. I just think the Zoom culture is very interesting in this. You see, I've seen it on television commercials now. Like a lot of television commercials are making them look like Zoom conferences and stuff. It's become, in two and a half months time, it's become such a heavy part of our culture that people weren't even dealing with before. You know, people using it, but not like now. Like, people use it to stay in touch with their family, whereas before it was purely just a business thing. Like, oh, you're going to do a call because somebody's in L.A. and somebody's in New York or something. Right. And now it's like, you know, Zoom because, you know, I miss my friends or whatever. It's just very, very interesting.
We did one for Mother's Day. And it was my mom, Cheyenne, and her mom, Rabia, who longtime listeners know, my older sister, and my brother-in-law, and Mr. Eric, and my cousin. And one reason I really wanted to do it is because, you know, a lot of us have FaceTime. We have FaceTime. We have group chats. We have WhatsApp. Like, I got more group chats, WhatsApp, GroupMe's now than I did pre-shutdown. So we have all these various chats and communications and Zoom happy hours and Zoom birthdays and Zoom hangouts happening all the fucking time, and we're
not stop
quarantine, whatever. But I found it, like, my mom and her peers don't all have that. So, like, for example, my cousin does, because she's president of her AKA chapter, so they're doing all their meetings on Zoom. So she's really like, I'm good if I don't get on no Zoom, right? But my mom, who lives alone, very much enjoys being able to see everybody's
face. Yeah, the interaction.
Like, the interaction, the crosstalk, the stuff like that. So we decided that we're going to start doing a family Zoom call, like, once a month. And I think with my stepmother, it was the same way. So there is, you know, there are people who get different things out of it. I have skipped many a Zoom birthday party. But sometimes they're fun, right?
So yeah, they can be fun. They can be fun.
It depends on mood. I think what people are learning is that just because you're at home doesn't mean this stuff doesn't still expend energy. So I'm a person who, I think, as a hazard of occupation, because for work I'm usually in meetings and on calls a lot, I don't like to talk on the phone. Like, I don't like to talk on the phone at home. I will text you all day. I do not want to get on the phone. The only person I talk to on the phone too regularly is my mama, literally. Even like my boyfriend, like, whatever, I will text your ass all day. And it's draining for me. I got to recharge after a day of a lot of interaction. So to that extent, even though Zoom doesn't require me to, you know, put on real clothes, go outside, do whatever, I still gotta brush my hair, not look crazy.
Yeah.
Check and see if I have on a bra. You know, like, those type of things. And then still be engaged on a certain level. And it wears you out. It really does wear you out.
Yeah, it does.
You know, check if the background or wherever I am is
messed up. You know, exactly. Like, yeah. It's a lot. Wanna give a couple of RIPs. My first RIP actually is to a friend of mine I grew up with, Sam Maven. He had a stroke several months ago, so it wasn't COVID related, but he passed away 2 days ago. He lived down in Houston, so I just want to give a shout out to him and his family. The stroke was really severe, and he never really recovered. He tried. He definitely was digging in with the rehab and stuff, but it was a heavy stroke. So I definitely want to give a shout out to him and his family. And then we want to give an RIP to Lil Richard, who's the architect of rock and roll. And I posted something about him, and I think a lot of people didn't really figure out, which is, like, when he would go on those award shows and be like, "Shut up, y'all don't give me nothing." I was like, he wasn't joking. Like, y'all were laughing. Y'all were laughing, but he was dead. He was dead ass serious.
Every time he got a chance.
Because he fucking meant it. He was like, yo, all these motherfuckers came through me. All these people you worship, Mick Jagger, the Beatles, they all came through me. And y'all don't give me nothing. Again, but he did, you know, he had the kind of like effeminate, you know, the way he spoke. And he was, you know, funny. So people kind of were like,
caricature.
Yeah.
I was saying that on a podcast this week. I was like, you know, he was such a persona. I was saying that during my formative years in the 80s, even though he wasn't recording anymore, he would do a lot of like, you know, features. He would pop up.
Be in a movie.
To say he was doing a caricature of himself. I was like, Richard couldn't even do a caricature of himself. That was Richard.
That's who he was, yeah.
People took it as shtick.
Yeah.
But like, that was legit.
Yeah. That was him. That was him. I mean, if you look at, you know, any interviews even from way, way back when they were, you know, black and white, that was him. You know, like, he wasn't doing it to be a comedian. You know, I mean, this is kind of who he was. And some people are naturally funny the way they speak or the way they, you know, they talk. But as far as him talking about getting his props and getting his flowers, like, and not getting a Grammy ever and all that shit, yeah, he was dead ass serious, and he deserved it for what he did and for how people blatantly stole, like Pat Boone stole records from him and like would make them in the white way, or you know, Jerry Lee Lewis playing the piano with the leg up. That's Richard. Like, they was like, they weren't even fronting, like they was the, you know, they wouldn't even try to act like they weren't stealing from him. And, you know, one thing that happened to him, and I mentioned it in the thing I tweeted, and I think a lot of people have kind of discovered this over the years, is, you know, years and years later, Michael Jackson, when he bought the ATV and, you know, got all these catalogs, one of the catalogs he gathered was Little Richard's. And he gifted it back to Richard.
He didn't give it back to Richard.
What did he do?
He gave Richard a check. He offered Richard a job at ATV. But, like, Richard has actually never confirmed it. And I think Richard's family actually said it didn't happen. That I don't know how that myth got started. Michael did not actually give Richard his publishing back.
So what did he do something for Richard?
I think he gave him some money. And he gave him either some money or something. He definitely gave him some money. And he offered Richard, like, a job or something. But he broke Richard off a little something. But he didn't give him his publishing back.
Okay, because the rumor was he had given Richard
and that rumor has persisted, but no, he ain't giving him a publishing back. Okay. And I looked, because I looked into that, because I had seen somewhere like, did he know? And wait, hold on a second. I can tell
love Mike. Not really sure. Mike is just giving out. I mean,
What happened. Mike helped him get a better rate on the publishing he still had.
Okay.
And.
Because Richard was getting no royalties.
Right. He helped Richard sue for back royalties that he was owed and helped him get a better royalty rate going forward. And he offered Richard a job with ATV. Richard declined. But Sony ATV Me Jack still owns Little Richard Publishing.
That's on brand, my nigga. That is 100% on brand.
Michael Jackson was not magnanimous. He was shrewd as fuck. And the whole reason he got publishing was because he saw it. Like, it's like investing in stuff. But I was always questionable about that. Like, I was like, did he really get rich or stuff? Because I feel like he would have said something about that, right?
Michael Jackson did the fucking Michael Jordan shrug to Paul McCartney. You know what I'm saying? It's like, hey, nigga, I mean, I got you.
What you want me to do?
What you want me to do?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, okay, I'm kind of glancing at it here. You said, yeah, because part of ATV was Specialty Records, which Mike obviously ended up owning when he bought the ATV catalog. And then, like you said, then he went on and gave Richard a much better rate because he was getting, like I said, he was literally getting nothing. And it's funny, you said that Specialty sold, especially back in the day, bought Richard's publishing for $50.
And wow. So
$50. So Mike was so Mike gave him something. He gave him a rate, I guess, where he could start receiving royalties. Tutti Frutti. Yeah, Tutti Frutti, I'm sorry. Tutti Frutti was sold to Specialty for $50. And I don't know. That's insane because
Tutti, you know how much that
millions
Tutti has probably, oh my God.
Millions.
How many commercials has that song been in?
Exactly. Movies.
And then, like, covers of it. Fucking how many people did the shit? Like,
$15. Yeah, all of them just do it in their little shows and shit.
$50. No, I think they just recorded it, though.
Yeah. $50. So, yeah. So, anyway. So, yeah. So, all right. So, we figured that out. So, Mike gave Richard a good rate. But Mike ain't give him the whole catalog back.
No, Mike ain't give him his shit back. Mike was like, I got you. It's with me. You can come visit it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to make sure you get some bread. But nigga, I ain't giving it to you.
We're going to keep this at my house.
Exactly. Now, you come on through. You know what I'm saying? See whatever you want. But, you know, bottom line is Richard definitely did not receive his just due. And he was, you know, instrumental in a lot of people's careers. Yeah. James Brown, Otis Redding, because all those guys are from Macon. Like, and he was kind of the first one to make it national out of their area. So they looked up to, like, James Brown looked up to Richard. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, he was like a star to him. Like, yo, this nigga made it out the hood, you know? So he obviously definitely deserves all his props. And he lived a long life. Was it 87? Was it 87?
87 is a hell of a run, man.
It is. That's a full run. That's a full
rock and, run. A rock and roll 87?
Exactly. Exactly. With all the shit that he was doing. And, you know, he's iconic, you know, openly gay artist in the 50s, black, you know, dealt with all the racism, dealt with everything. So, yeah, props to him. And then definitely a huge RIP to Andre Harrell. Founder of Uptown Records, music man, music icon, who also ran Motown Records for a while and started Revolt with Puffy, responsible for. I was talking about my dude yesterday. It's interesting, like, people don't kind of think about this, but Andre's really responsible for bringing New Jack Swing to the world.
Yeah, because there was no
signed guy.
There was no, well, not just because he signed Guy and Teddy, but because there was no home. Like, when Andre started Uptown, and the reason Andre started Uptown is because there was Tommy Boy, there was Priority, there was there were homes for hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
R&B was still, like, you know, in the midst of the Quiet Storm era.
Yeah, yeah, and it was all major labels.
Right, and even though New Jack Swing was starting to buzz, there was no home for it. There was no place to cultivate it.
Yeah.
Andre is responsible for it becoming a culture, like, 100%, because that's what Uptown did, right? Like, the whole energy of Uptown was that New Jack Swing energy. And I've been telling people, and it's funny, Jeff, so Jeff and I were both on podcast of our friends, It's the Real.
Yes, The Real,
Eric and Jeff. And it was funny for me to listen to, it was us and Clark, and, like, there are places in which the three of us said, like, the literal exact same thing about Dre, which was that all that sexy shit, party shit, fly shit, keep preserve the sexy, keep that energy going, that Puff gets credit for it. That's Andre's shit.
All day. He coined the term growing and sexy. That's his term.
He coined ghetto fabulous.
Ghetto fabulous, yeah, those are his terms.
Andre's shit. And that is, like, that alone, that energy in hip-hop is part of what made rap such a big business, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of what inspired the bling era, which Dre was doing with Jekyll and Hyde in fucking 81.
Yeah.
You know, wearing silk suits.
Yeah.
Rapping about champagne and chicks and, you know, bottles and all that type
going of stuff. Going to Paris and all that.
Mm-hmm. And jewelry. Wasn't nobody doing that in 1981, you know? Yeah. And so that, even if, like, he was the first, we talk about tastemakers, we talk about lifestyle. Those terms are almost meaningless now, but Dre was the first to really be like, we're not just gonna sell the music. We're gonna sell this whole shit. Like, all of it, wrap it up, package it, the energy, everything.
And what I loved about that, which, to expand on what you just said, is I love that even when he was basically telling us, yo, like I said in the interview, like, yo, there's a place called the Hamptons where all these people have these houses on the beach. And you go there in the summer, or you go to Paris, you go to Saint-Tropez, and they got this fly shit there. He was never trying to assimilate. He was like, we're going to take our shit and go there. And they're going to be on our dicks because we're going to bring the fly shit to them. We're going to be in this place.
That's what he was always about. You didn't have to.
You'd have to simulate to them. You just take the fly shit and you go to them, and they're gonna fuck with us because they're gonna see how sexy we are.
He took, in my opinion, he really was the personification of taking uptown downtown, but not not like hat in hand sort of way.
Yes.
Like, yo, we fucking fly up here.
Yeah.
And I know y'all doing it down here, but we can all get into this shit.
Y'all ain't doing it like we do it.
What I also really loved was he understood young fly shit, man. Like, it didn't have to be him for him to get it.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of, and I also mentioned, he was really the first person that I could think of that seamlessly transitioned from talent to executive.
Yes. Yes.
And really made that a thing.
Yes.
That wasn't a thing, guys. Like,
at all.
You know what I'm saying? Like, not even a little bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his lineage, it's Puff, it's Hev.
Mm-hmm.
They were all successful, you know, talent transitioning to you know, executives, and then yep. Puffy came the other way around. But you get the point.
Yeah.
But like he was also
Jeff Red too, by the way.
I wouldn't absolutely.
And Jeff went on to become A&R executive.
And groomed Heavy for it.
A&R, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy took the helm of Uptown when he left.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Sean, to your point, I think the biggest gift that Andre gave to music was Andre understood. Andre didn't just have an eye for talent with artists. He had an excellent eye for executive talent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the number of people in the urban music industry, aside from Puff, who are Uptown alum or who come from that branch of the family tree, is like June Ambrose started at Uptown. Lou Williams, who used to manage Outkast, started at Uptown. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many people across. Lisa Cambridge from RCA started. Like, there's so many people across who are senior executives at labels, and even if they didn't directly work at Uptown, who somehow Dre poured into them, taught them, mentored them. You know, even I'm indirectly a product of that because I was at Bad Boy when Dre was president of Bad Boy.
Mm.
And at that time, like, half the senior staff was from Uptown, you know, so it's, and Puff always, the people who are Puff's inner circle are really like Uptown inner circle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think that, like, that was when I was looking at all the tributes to him across social media, everybody echoed a few things. One, he always saw you. He would take time for you. He would talk to you.
Mad approachable.
Mad approachable. Two, you never saw the dude, even when he was mad, he wasn't mad, right? Yeah. Like, and that was one of the reasons I think Puff kept him so close, is because Puff needed Dre to not be out of control.
Yeah.
Like, Puff needed Dre to rein him in and, like, calm him down, or, like, go in and talk to the staff after Puff flipped some furniture over and walked out, right? And he was mad approachable, and he was the part, like, he was always the party. Like, he was always the party.
Yeah.
So he was like the energy creator. But like I said, I think his biggest legacy is just the amount of, like, everybody from, you know, video producers to stylists to creatives to, there's so many people who are just like, yo, you may not have gotten me my first job, but you made this introduction. You told me to talk to this person. You told me to do this thing. You encouraged me. There's like 7 different people who are like, I stayed at your house. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just that he just gave so much of himself. He was so generous, which I don't think we hear enough about. We were talking about Clarence Avant when that doc came out about Kingmakers. Dre was that person. He was a connector and a mentor in, like, a really real way.
Yeah. I mean, he was a special dude, you know, like, you know, like, you know, funny dude too, like, always checking out what you had on and all that, and you know, your man got on the Gators. Oh shit, I'm saying, like, you sexy nigga, you know what I'm saying? He was you know, he's a special dude, man. He's gonna be, you know, sorely missed, and obviously, like, you know, love to Wendy Credo, his ex-wife, and his son Johnny. And Puff and the people who, like, were his family. I spoke to O'Neal last night, his cousin, for a while. What you say?
I said, how's O'Neal doing?
You know, just kind of stunned.
Because Dre was like a dad to him, too. O'Neal was.
Yeah. O'Neal came.
Live with Dre for shit ever.
Yeah. Because Neil came up here from South Carolina, you know, literally, you know, out the damn, out the backwoods.
Right.
Dre took him in and you know, and introduced him to people that lived with him and molded him into being the person that O'Neal is today. So, yeah, you know, I mean, everybody's just kind of shocked and stunned by it. You know, so, yeah, but definitely wanted to just give him a proper shout out, man. It's sad because of what's going on with COVID and everything that we can't do a proper send off the way we'd like. You can't do a big funeral. You can't do a big, you know,
a uptown party.
A party or event. Of like course, was, no question. It would have been some type of event. Yeah, something. You know, we can't do any of that because of what's going on in the world. So, you know, it's also
I hope that Spotify, I need to text somebody Spotify. They need to really consider Andre for the next mogul.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no question. Like, he should have been being considered anyway. Yeah, so it's tough because we kind of don't get the closure as well. So, you know, and that's just across the board. That's just Andre. It's just anybody who's passing away is not, you know, people aren't getting the closure that you kind of get when you can do a proper service and all that. So, but I just wanted to mention that because, you know, he was really, really important and I really admired him immensely. You know, I really, really enjoyed any time I got a chance to spend time around Andre. I want to mention real quick, the White House got the Rona.
Heavy.
And they apparently it's more Rona in the White House than they're saying publicly. Right now they got it down to, I know that Pence's person got it, which is the press secretary. She got it. She's married to Stephen Miller.
Yep.
So he's self-quarantining. Trump's valet. Yeah, got it. And they're saying there's a couple other people who got it too. But they're not trying to say because they don't want to, you know, because of Trump being Trump. Your man's just going down in flames. Every day is worse than the day before with this dude, man. You know, every day is just worse than the day before. Now you're talking about trying to throw Obamagate.
Way they always try to deflect Obama. Like, Obama has been out of office for 4 years. The man is minding his fucking business.
Obamagate!
And
niggas is running with it.
But I even saw Fox pivot, because now a talking point I saw on Fox is that, because here's what I think. I think Trump knows that he's in danger, or the GOP knows that they're in danger of losing this election.
Of getting wiped out across the board, yeah.
Right. So I've seen Fox pivot to be like, a vote for Biden is a vote for Obama. Like, that's literally the language that they're using. So they're trying to still make Obama like the foil again. Yeah,
the boogeyman. He's the boogeyman. Yeah, like, right. Don't vote for that. Don't vote for that black man again. And Obama's like, nigga, what? I'm on a yacht. Like, what are you talking about? I ain't running for shit. What do you think about this shit, bro?
I think that the corona COVID-19 is far worse than what they're telling us. If this is what they're telling us, then that means that this is the only things that this is what they know they couldn't contain. Mm-hmm. So what they've been able to contain is probably way off the charts. You know, the Obamagate shit, I mean, listen, what happened was the president was on a conference call that was being recorded. I'm not sure if he was aware it was being recorded. I'm pretty sure he's aware of everything he says at this point, and that I would think that he would assume that it was being recorded. And he basically took shots at the administration. He didn't say Trump's name specifically, but he took shots at the administration. So this was their thing to latch on to, you know, like you say, pivot, right? Like this was their out. Like, oh, he said something. Oh, we can latch on to that right now. I mean, that's all this is. I mean, the guy is grossly incompetent. It is fascinating to me how anyone is still defending him, the office, or the mode of operation with this conservative party. So, I mean, it is what it is. I've ignored him at this point. There's really nothing I could do other than get angry. So I just listen for the shit that's going to impact me.
It's really wild to see how it was it's 80 something thousand people dead as of today, and the numbers are still going up and how this they're trying to spin it like this a good thing. It's like, it's almost saying like you got burned on 1/3 of your body, but the other 2/3 is cool. Like,
well, but you know, that is how a lot of nations operate with some measure of just taking collateral damage. They just operate in that way. So you know, it isn't, they're going to look at everything in these very absolute terms because that's the only way that they can justify it. And sure, when you look at the numbers of the percentage of population versus the loss of life, it's going to be a small number. And what they should be doing is looking at the steps like that they didn't.
We're also giving actual numbers instead of percentages.
Yes. Right. Like not processing the fact that of the people that will die, you probably could have cut that by, you know, 60 or 70% had you taken measures and done the things that were necessary, right? The economy is probably not taking a bigger hit. And, you know, I personally didn't agree with, you know, the sort of blanket one size fits all, because not every place is the same.
Not at all.
You know, Florida should have harder restrictions than fucking Wyoming.
Yeah.
You know, we're not, you know, it's not equal.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to just kind of piggyback what you just said, which is kind of, you know, some of the stuff opening back up and, you know, kind of the fighting about that as well. And some of these companies now, bigger companies like Twitter came out yesterday, you know, the corporation of Twitter came out yesterday and announced that their employees can work from home forever. Like, like forever. Like, we ain't even know we're gonna have offices no more in San Francisco. Like, we might just shut that shit down or just keep that shit super skeleton. I know Amazon and Google announced yesterday that they definitely ain't coming back till next year.
Yeah,
2021 at minimum 2021. And I think we're gonna see more companies kind of do this. And I think that is also a kind of double edged sword. Obviously, one is, you know, protecting people and being, you know, being careful about the spread of COVID and all that. But what I've been kind of saying to people too is y'all better keep your antennas up, because the fact that they're realizing we might not need all this manpower.
I don't think it's so much that they're realizing they don't need manpower. I think the thing is that they're realizing that, especially if you're a tech company, there's very few staff that actually really needs to be
up in the office.
The other thing that I'm guessing is that a lot of these companies, these bigger tech companies, they have basically like farm offices. Like, they're open floor plans. They're a bunch of cubicles with like half gates up. And I don't think they can have people come back in a current office layout.
Because there ain't no way to stop it if it ain't no, it's all wide open space.
Right. So they also have to restructure their entire office floor plan. You know what I mean? Because, and I told that, like, I knew open floor plans were a horrible idea anyway. People always acted like they were about, like, being able to collaborate and brainstorm. No, they're not. They were about cost. But yeah. I think that what companies are realizing is what folks have been arguing forever is that remote work does work. I think that what a lot of people have had to shift their thinking on is that, you know, so many people want to measure productivity by mere hours that you're visible.
Yeah, like you was at the office for 10 hours a day.
Yeah, you know? So you're working hard. But you could be in the office for 10 hours a day and only got like 4 hours of work done because you're getting...
That's usually what happens. Exactly. People are talking, people go to lunch, if you had a meeting, you know, say the meeting goes from 1 to 2, like the first 20 minutes of the meeting, niggas is just talking.
Yeah.
Right, let's get to the meeting. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, there's all these kind of things that, you know, people take coffee breaks, people go smoke cigarettes. These all these little things that add up, like you said, Nye, to much less productivity than the amount of hours that you spend in the office.
Right.
You know, you got a meeting outside the office. That's going to take time to get there and back. You know, you might stop on the way. You know, whatever. You got something to say?
Listen, I think that we should also analyze the companies that are saying this. Okay, these are, you know, cash rich tech companies.
Yes.
This is also something that you can use as you go into secure talent, and this is what they do. They want to come off as seeming like they are, you know, employee first. We're mm-hmm. concerned about your health.
Mm-hmm.
And for many of them, they either probably own the buildings that they're in. They operate on campuses. It is inconsequential to them, the cost of an office. So, yeah, I'd be very interested to know, like, how does the fucking the janitor at Google, like, how does that work
yeah.
for him?
Like, yeah, is he, yeah.
Like,
the cafeteria, the, fucking work? The cafeteria lady.
Yeah, the chefs and all of that shit.
Yeah, the cafeteria lady might be gone anyway. Shit, when we come back off of this thing.
That's the thing. I would also look at the fine print of that. I would anticipate that those will be at minimum, those are going to be mid-level to high-level executives that are going to have that option. I think that while, you know, working from home, you don't have a drop in engagement now because we're still kind of getting, you know, used to this. But are you still going to have that level of engagement a year from now in the fucking springtime when, you know, people are taking their kids to baseball practice
yeah.
and they're home, they're more apt to adapt to their families. And again,
yeah, they're home, but they're not necessarily sitting in the house.
Yes. Wow. That's, you know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. those are the other things, right? Like the goal is also that, you have a level of availability and a level of access.
Yeah.
And for those of us that have worked in executive positions, we understand that that comes with the territory, regardless whether you worked at the office or whether you, you know, work someplace else. I also think that for creative spaces, I think that we have to be mindful that working in isolation doesn't necessarily, may not necessarily lend itself to the think tank and being in those meetings. And, you know, like I'm pretty sure you guys have had those A&R meetings
yeah.
where you're hunkering down all day and you're going over projects and you're having those marketing meetings.
Yeah,
we have those development meetings, but you have to sit in there.
We're going to be here for a while.
We're here all day. Order yeah. lunch, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Order lunch.
Yeah, we all day. No, yeah, y'all saying so, our means really do legit be
couple,
all
the couple days. They'll go a couple days.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
I will say that there is, as much as I hate, like, what seems to be the new forced employee bonding, like, everybody has to go get drinks, everybody has to do rope, everybody has those bullshit. There is a natural employee camaraderie that I do miss and that I think will be missed. If yes. people aren't in a company together, I would say, especially in the label system, I'm sure there's other places, you know, for every artist, there's a core team. There's the marketing person, the publicity person, the radio person, you know, whatever, where you do everything together. And just that partnership and that in the trenches together thing is really helpful. And then there's also just the fun, like you going into somebody's office to shoot the shit for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah,
that will definitely be missing, and that'll take a little something out of the work experience. Tech companies don't care about their shit.
And that to me, is a big part of those connections that you make. You know how many fucking
right. That's how you build companies.
Twitter might have been born from two motherfuckers shooting the shit at the job.
I'm right? sure it like, probably was. Just, yeah.
Right.
Right. Like that. How many labels do we know have happened because this guy doesn't want to sign, you know, they don't want to sign this guy at the label.
Yeah.
Oh, this guy got the market. All right, we're going to go do this. So we're going to go take
it. Well, also, on the music and entertainment side, I don't think music and entertainment can adapt to an all remote place because nobody will ever get promoted. Nobody will ever get, because it is a relationship business.
Yes.
You have to spend time. The bosses have to see your face. They have to see how you move. They have to see what your instincts look like, and that's not something you can convey remotely. So I think that there might be a future in which the businesses that do go back to office settings offer more remote ability. Like, you ain't got to be here every day. Maybe you got to be here for label meetings. Maybe you got to be here, like, if we're doing a launch, you ain't got to be here every day. But tech companies can go full remote. There are other companies that I don't think branding companies really can. I don't think entertainment companies really
can.
There has to be some synergy that happens in person.
I also think you're going to see an increase in people being caught by surprise by being fired.
That was my point earlier.
You're definitely going to see a lot of that, and I don't think that
because you can't fake the hunker just because they're downsizing.
Well, because you can't ear hustle. You can't smell the tone. You can't
feel it.
The energy. Yeah. There is a palpable energy. Yes, what's happening? You are playing chess when you are in the office. You are absolutely watching those mm-hmm. fucking chess pieces. You know when a regime change is coming in.
Yeah.
You know when this person is going that you ain't safe no more. That your ass might be in a sling.
You might be cool with the. With the head of the company's assistant on the low, she pull your card like, yo, be careful about those things.
Brush up your resume.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, I heard her talk about some shit. Yeah.
That is essential. Like just being able to go to an assistant and be like, what kind of mood they in? What they looking like? What were they talking about? All right. Like just
exactly.
be able to,
So, and my last thing is, too many motherfuckers use the office to cover their tracks and cheating.
Oh yeah, no.
Exactly. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the relationships. Yeah.
I mean,
how's it go? We had to stay late. We had to go out after work.
We got to go out of town for a trip.
Yup.
All that shit is dead.
Dead.
You know all that shit is dead. If you've been saying that, if that's been your justification, that's been your reasoning, rationale.
We got the BET Awards coming up. I'll be gone for 4 days in LA. That shit is dead.
What are cheating ass people doing right now? Like they're
going crazy.
Shit is fucked up right now.
They're going insane. Because there's literally no excuse. To go out, period.
There's no go sneak and get on the phone.
The most you can do is say I'm going to the grocery store, and that's one time a week, maybe. And even that, like, you're going to time where you're going to do fuck old girl in the car in the back of the stop.
Right.
Like, it's just, they're going nuts. And I'm also wondering what, and I think we mentioned this early, I'm wondering what the divorce rate is going to be as this goes, because like we said before, there's a lot of couples that don't really know each other like that.
They pass each other.
Yeah, Earl get home a little. Earl get home a little later than Sharon. You know what I'm saying? They do a little quick dinner, talk a little about how was the day or whatever. They get ready to go to bed and they do it again the next day. Then on the weekend, Earl go get his car washed. I got to run some errands. You know what I'm saying? Of course, he might go see a shorty, whatever. Sharon gonna get her hair done and the nails done. Got to take the kids to practice. So the whole Saturday shot. They come back maybe at night and have a little pizza, you know what I'm saying, and then watch TV. Sunday, maybe they go to church. Maybe, right? Maybe. Come home and have dinner.
Everybody life mapped out, nigga.
Mapped out. You know what I'm saying? Come home after church. You can stop by mama for a minute, you know what I'm saying? Say hi to her. Then have a little church, and then you watch a little TV at night. And then it's boom. So, like, that concentrated, nonstop time together is like, damn, I don't even like this girl like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I think the divorce rates are going to increase. But I also think that was, you know, part of that is inevitability, right? Like there is a measure of that, and there's, you know, people are not necessarily as financially, women are not necessarily dependent financially on men in that way anymore. And I think that there are going to be people that are going to end up staying in marriages longer. My suggestion
they can't afford not to.
I was going
to
say, I would look at the divorce rates between 18 to 24 months after we get back to normal.
Right. Okay.
Then to me, that is, though, like, you really don't like this motherfucker at all. Like,
exactly.
The moment you could leave,
you was out.
You was
gone. My thing is, like, if you get a divorce now, where you going? You're the lockdown, nigga. You can't go nowhere.
You can't get a divorce now because the courts also aren't open.
Yeah. You're sleeping down in the basement.
I do also think that what we're seeing, so I don't know if you guys follow these two. I started following two subreddits because of their Twitter accounts. One is Am I the Asshole? One is Relationship Reddit. So people will, you know, send in complaints about stuff that's going on in their lives. But a lot of what is happening in the post since the last, and that is the same subreddit that you posted the Waffle House fight from. It's from that Reddit, but there's a Twitter account that just posts stuff from that Reddit. Okay. So a lot of what's coming up is, this is starkly revealing the division of labor in the home. So mm-hmm. even when the there are instances even where the husband's at home, it has a lesser, the husband's at home, maybe the wife is an essential employee, but the husband still expects the wife to handle the house labor and the kids, right?
Cooking like and all that,
still expects her to come home, or still expects her to finish work and still balance like the kids, the house, you know, the cooking, the cleaning, even if he's also spending more time at home.
That's
so
crazy.
And for some people who only have to spend, usually had to spend like a few hours together at night and time together on the weekends, and who have conflicting work styles, personality styles, ways of managing stress, it's just highlighting conflict. Like, I personally know that even if I loved somebody madly, by now in a one bedroom apartment, not be speaking to a motherfucker. Like, don't talk to me, don't look at me.
Especially if y'all got a little baby or something. This man,
yeah, like
World War III up in that motherfucker, man. So yes, love to all the couples, man. You know what I'm saying? And you know what? And let's be positive. I think on the other side, and I've seen people talking about this too, it's made families closer.
In some ways, I believe so, yeah.
People are saying they get to spend more time with their kids than they've ever spent before, and they're really enjoying it. I think it is making some relationships stronger because you're kind of forced to spend more time together, and you know, maybe you're discovering things you didn't know, or you're able to kind of hash some shit out that you was mad about or she was mad about. And maybe, you know, it's bringing some people closer together as well. So I don't want to be all negative and shit. I want to try to add some positivity to this crazy-ass situation we're involved in right now. I got to mention Lil Boozy, man.
Do we though?
Yeah, do we though?
I guess.
I just
do something every week. Let Boozy do whatever the fuck Boozy wants.
Yeah, I mean, let's kind of change it. I didn't want to get into what he did. I think what he did was, what he was talking about was ridiculous and heinous. But my thing is kind of like, I don't know why people are still surprised at him. Like, why did y'all still get up in arms? Like,
because I think some of these people didn't get on Boosie until he got out of jail. So they're just now kind of
realizing who he is.
To who Boosie is, yeah.
I think also people are... you know, having someone admit that, like hearing a story from a person who, you know, had a sexual experience that was, you know, rape or, you know, inappropriateness or, you know, whatever title I think is appropriate here, right? Like, it's one thing, right? Like, there's a level of empathy. And I think that the outrage is that him doubling down on this process and making it seem
bragging about it.
And making it seem as though this has made him sort of this idealistic dad. And I mean, I guess you are a hell of a dad at 13, right? Like, I would assume that at 13, if I could do whatever the fuck I wanted to do, right, like, that would make you a really cool dad. I get it. And I think that oftentimes, men have really, really warped sensibilities when it comes to sexual appropriateness, sexual behavior. And what I think oftentimes happen is that they tend to align themselves with men who think like that. Because really, like, guys who aren't really creeps, they don't really fuck with creeps.
Right.
Yeah, they'd be like, this nigga's crazy and I don't want to be around him.
I'm not being around. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, so I think that that's really kind of what's in line. And the fact that he thinks that this is somehow a prevalent part of a rite of passage to manhood, I think that is what's throwing people off. It's because he's trying to, he's still sort of justifying this in this very sincere way. Like, he means this shit. Like, it's not, I definitely don't think he's like trying to be an asshole. Like, I definitely feel like he
thinks he did a good thing.
He can't wrap his head around why you don't get it.
Yeah. Why you ain't done it yet. You know what I'm saying? And what really blew me was he's two things. First of all, he said that I don't know the proper title, but the kind of way he was talking, it sounded like a girl had hit him off first. And then he was like, yo, I want you to go do my son's too.
Awful.
Which is nuts, like, nigga. But then the other thing is, like, and I'm not the victim blame of it, but, like, who's old girl? Like, why are you doing this?
Right.
Like, why are you? Why
used to be a thing, though, right? It used to be. There was a time when let me get my 13, 14, 15, 16 year old kid a hooker so he can get his first piece of ass was not unusual. Now, it's been some years.
This Boosie's son is 12.
Oh, yeah. So, never mind.
Like, and this woman, and Boosie said, so she was a grown woman. But somebody grown.
There's another rapper who said they did that for their son. I can't remember who. I think Boosie did it for another. Does Boosie have an older son?
No.
Somebody did this. Somebody else did this for their son, like, maybe in the last 5 years or so, too.
Unbelievable.
I think it's the same story. It just got revisited. I think it's the same story. Yeah.
Okay. Let's mention Erica versus Jill. look at bro cheating now. Bro was happy to see Jill.
Oh, you
Jill
just
say
Jill. Look at his face. If y'all can see, Sean had to look down.
What happened? What you talking about? What? You tripping. You know what I'm saying? I don't even like Jill like that. So Jill Scott and Erica Badu did a versus battle Saturday past, night before Mother's Day. They got the biggest versus numbers as of today, which was
the biggest versus impressions.
Impressions, yeah. I know they had at one point. I saw 725,000 people in the versus in of itself, and I guess the way it calculates across all platforms, it was 1 billion impressions.
Allegedly,
you know, yeah,
that's a big fucking alleged, bro.
Yeah, because a billion is a lot. That's insanity.
Can I just give you some perspective on a billion?
Yeah.
If you took every impression and let it play for 1 second, right? If you made a film and you just let it play for 1 second, do you know how long it would take for you to get to 1 billion?
Yeah.
32 years, my nigga.
Really?
But they're also definitely talking, Sean, about just impressions from tweets, hashtags, all that type of shit.
I'm saying if you took every single one of those impressions separately and put it in a reel and let it play for 1 second, it would be listen, I think they did a phenomenal thing and I think they did phenomenal numbers.
Right.
I think that they've been putting a little sauce on the impressions and that's okay, right?
I wasn't sure about the whole 2.7 me and people was trying to get in the face of Teddy. I was like, that's a lot of people. Like,
yeah.
That's almost 3 million people was trying to get in that shit.
Like, 3 million people, nigga? Like, first of all, nigga, like Chris Rock said, Blacks ain't in but like 10 places, nigga. You know what I'm saying?
Word.
It ain't that many of us.
Word. Yeah. You know, so I don't know about the impressions. God bless. I don't know how they calculate it, whatever.
I mean, I will say this. I saw.
But it did well, obviously. It did well.
And I saw a very diverse, like, Paul Wall was in that motherfucking dropping heart eyes. You know what I mean? Tyler, the Creator was in there.
Yeah. The people in the chat was Michelle Obama was in there.
Michelle Obama was in there.
The chat was the chat was
Fagging Barack during, Crown Royal. We saw
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
We saw that. I did love, and I've said this before about, this is one of the things I love the most about Versus is that, you know, in the, especially the past decade of streaming, well, the past 3 years have seen like a nostalgia resurgence, but from like 2008 to 2018, music was becoming very disposable, right? So, you know, people are putting out stuff more frequently. There is no such thing as building a music collection because technically we all have the same music in our phones at all times. Mm-hmm. And there was a loss of kind of the ownership and permanence of music. And even when you would see music fans argue about catalog, it would really be about numbers. Like, every once in a while, you would have something like, does this person have a classic? But there wasn't a real appreciation for catalog and achievements. And I've seen Versus elevate music conversations.
Yeah.
Beyond, they had this many number ones, they sold this many units.
Yeah, that's not what this is about. Yeah. And the verse also kind of reminds you of things like the records that both of them played. I was like, oh shit, I forgot about this song.
Right.
And in the case of like a Babyface, it made people go, I didn't know he wrote this. You know, so it kind of opened up, like you said, different conversations about what these amazing artists have done. Jill and Erica's thing obviously was a little different because it was two women, and I personally thought Erica was being a little salty in the front, being polite, but Jill was trying to engage her,
Jill had been drinking and was trying to make you like a girlfriend hangout.
Yeah, like
Erica came prepared for like an actual
for like battle. A battle. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Erica had edits. You could tell Erica strategized. Erica had edits.
Yeah, well, Erica's a DJ too.
So I was going to say she's a DJ. She's her roots in rap are real.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Right. Erica probably had a freestyle on and ready to go.
Ain't no problem, nigga. She just didn't play it. Nigga. She got bangers.
Yeah,
nigga.
Yeah, I think exactly.
For her after party that she did, but you know, Jill was literally like scrolling through her iPhone, playing shit.
Yeah, and talking like, Erica, I loved when I saw you at the show. Like, tell me what you thought about when you wrote that song. Yeah. I love that song.
I did appreciate some of the stories, though, because finally,
did loosen up after a while.
Yeah, the first thing I did love and respect was Erica coming off top like, I'm playing You Got Me off go. And then Jill was like, well, I'm going to play it too. I actually loved that setting the tone of like, because people have been talking about who's going to play You Got Me, who gets that point. And I really appreciated that, even though I gave that round to Jill in my head, only because the version Jill played was the first time she had ever sung the song live at all. Mm. So I gave her that point. But I really did appreciate the storytelling. Like, you know, at one point, Erica asking Jill, you know, how she started writing, you know, and Jill talking about being assigned an essay, and that's how she discovered Vicky Giovanni and Sonia Sanchez. So even in the beginning, they were talking about homeschooling and how it's going. So I did appreciate, like, the sister love vibe of it, even though, like, it got a little hotepy sometimes. Like,
but that was to be expected.
But that was to be expected, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
no, Erica's not talking about the 5% of shit and on.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, and all that. Yeah, but it was great. Except by the end, like, you know, Jill's son popped in, and then Erica's kids popped in, and it became like it felt really good. I didn't even, you know, nobody was keeping score. I don't know who won or lost. It wasn't even about that.
Right.
I just really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it a lot. I got to apologize to Jill because I said last week that she have 20 joints. She did.
Well, she pulled out a bunch of album cuts, though. She pulled out, like, both of them did, but both of them pulled out album cuts. But the thing about Jill and Erica, fortunately, and there were a couple of times we were joking with my group that was watching and commentating that there was a couple of times you could tell that Erica had never heard that song before.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But the Jill and Erica core fan base, they are album listeners.
Yes.
And Jill and Erica are from an era, like, I was actually thinking about this recently. I cannot remember the last time there was a new album that I listened to top to bottom. Like, there used to be albums where every time you played them top to bottom, not just first listen. So, you know, and Jill and
Erica, I think to your point, we had gotten into a, you know, space where if you had two records, that was it. Everything else was filler.
Yeah.
Like, you were searching for records versus that particular previous generation looked at an album as a work of art. They looked at it as a space. They would get into a space emotionally. They would get into a space mentally. They would find a producer that had their sound, you know, that they were able to connect with. And so I think that you have a it's just different. You know what I'm saying? It's no other way to go.
The last time I remember feeling an album that you could tell was like really intentionally sequenced, aside from like a concept album like Lemonade or something, the last time I really remember being moved by an album sequencing in a real way was when I heard Good Kid, Mad City. Okay. And but other than that, you know, I think with R&B albums, people don't give as much thought to it because folks just don't listen. Like, folks will listen to hip hop like that still just because they want to be able to talk about the album when it dropped. But people don't consume R&B like that anymore. So my hope with Versus overall is that it has shown the value in catalog. And it has shown, you know, the value in revisiting full bodies of work instead of just moving, propelling forward all the time, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm fucking with, you know, Frank Ocean all top to bottom, and Tiller, and, you know, my nigga Party, you know what I'm saying? So, but anyway, but I understand your point. I'm not disputing your point at all. This week we have Luda and Nelly.
I think that's fun.
Yeah, it's going to be vital. Because first of all, those guys have great personalities.
Yeah. They're both very funny. They have fun music.
They have fun music. They're like funny guys. They're very fun guys. And, you know, and they both vets. They got mad stories, too. Yep. So they're going to have a great time. And I think people are really sleeping on Nelly. Like, I keep feeling like Luda going to kill him. And I'm a Luda fan. But I'm like, hold on now. Like, let's not act like Nelly wasn't dominating some shit for a while.
Nelly definitely got some choice. I think the X factor with Nelly, though, is that there are definitely some of his joints that are more pop popular.
Like the Tim McGraw record.
Like the Florida Georgia Line shit. Like, he has a couple of joints that are really more, because, you know, well, Nelly reached a point where he was like bro music. You know what I mean? Like, he was like white frat boy music. But, you know, he still got grills, and he's still, you know what I mean? Like, he's
eagle,
still
got, get your eagle on.
Eagle on, it's get hot in here.
Yeah.
You know, he still got some joints.
Yeah.
And if he pulls out, you know, other Saint Lunatic's work, you know, stuff like that, I think it could definitely be better. Like Luda has so many features.
Yeah. We got a lot of features.
You know, Luda definitely can, and I think that people, I'll even say for me, like, there's a lot of early 2000s music that when I listen back to it, I'm like, oh, I liked this more than I thought I did, because I've kind of dismissed it in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And as an era of kind of like silliness. But when I go back, there are things that I'm like, oh, I didn't think I would still like this as much as I did. And Luda and Nelly are two of those artists. Like, when their music comes back up, I'd be like, oh, I'm not going to sit and listen to it in the crib, but it's fun.
Yeah, but it's kind of dope. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
So I know you're moving more into an artist space now with Versus instead of a producer space, which opens the door up a little wider.
Exactly. I know y'all don't watch Insecure.
Nope.
But
this was a good week, allegedly.
I watched.
Oh, you did watch. You did watch.
Yeah, I watched. I caught up. I watched last week, and then I watched this week.
Okay, so what'd you think?
I mean,
I think you don't really like them.
I think Molly might be the worst character on TV.
Now, that's bigger than you, because you putting her over Mary Jane? No, you
She's the worst person since Mary Jane.
Oh, since Mary Jane, okay. Because I know you hated Mary Jane.
Yeah, the show is interesting. I think the most interesting thing about the show is people projecting.
Oh, my God. Dude, the show comes on at what? What does it come on? 10 o'clock or so at night? I think 10:30. By like, I think it's 10, whatever. Let's say 10:30 for sake of conversation. I think it is 10:30 actually. But by 11:05, it's like 48 think pieces.
Yo.
And everybody, and it's like, as Sean said, the projection of people about their relationships with, you know, who their friends in this case, and their girlfriends in this case, it's unbelievable
how much people project. I saw Crystal have to tweet And Yvonne Orji retweeted it to say thank you. I saw Crystal have to tweet, like, please remember that Yvonne is not Molly's real life. Because I guess people were, like, coming
running
out.
Running up on her, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, because I even saw Yvonne say something like, you know, I'm glad you guys are really passionate, blah, blah, blah. But Crystal had to be like, please remember that Issa D is not Issa Rae and Yvonne Orji is not Molly.
Yeah. It's been a really good season. Like we said last week, it was definitely a lot of humor this week because it was at her block party and there were all these kind of, you know, places to do humor within the block party. And a lot of it was very funny. I mean, it's a very funny show. But that being said, they definitely have turned up the notch a bit on the drama side this season to me more than other seasons. Other seasons, I think the drama tended to come a little later in the season. And the earlier episodes tended to be more lighthearted. But this season, there's drama in every episode. Because it's only episode 4 or 5?
No, I think you're further along than that. It's at least 5.
Okay, so 5. But they're going to go at least 8 to 10. So they're going...
They go 8.
They go 8? So they're heavy on the drama already. And it's interesting because... And Brad, tell me what you think about this. Like, I find like this episode that they had Sunday... in the past, would have been the finale.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it kind of. Yeah, it was. It was a bit of a peak, but I'm curious. And well, it's actually making me curious as to how they end the season.
That's exactly my point. You say, okay, you're going to do at least three more after this explosion. Like it would have been a cliffhanger. Like, oh my God, they had a fight and now they're not friends no more. And even the part when she says when she's laying on the couch and she says, I don't fuck with Molly like that when she's talking to Nathan. Yeah. That was in the first episode of the season. So even them bringing that in episode 5 to say, oh, this is who she was talking to and what the scenario was, like usually that would have been the end.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, oh, wow. Cause
this is going to go on to episode 7.
Is this week of 7?
No, I said the season is only going to 7.
Oh, okay. So there's 2 more then.
This was 5, so there's 2.
Yes, there's 2 more. Yes. So this is very, very, very interesting the way they're doing it. And you know, the writers are not the type of writers I don't think that just wrap things up neat in a bow. So a lot of people are like, "Oh, I think she's going to get back with Lawrence," and I'm like, "That's just too easy. That's just too easy. I don't foresee that. I mean, obviously, I don't know, but I don't know. I'm enjoying the season though. But like Bruce said, I mean, The projection shit is unbelievable. What do you think about the projection shit, bro?
I think it's so what I find very interesting here, man, is that you kind of see what I think are generational lines, right? Like what we think is appropriate, you know, based on, you know, how we were kind of raised and how we kind of grew up. And to think, you know, they're friends like Molly, right? Like, this wasn't about her going around and asking, you know, for help, right? Like, this was about that she wanted to be the one to block this. She wanted to be if she couldn't be the facilitator, then it shouldn't happen, you know. Which is why she was peppering her with the question. In my opinion, right? Like, it's why she would be peppering her with those questions, right? The initial assumption was that you are a, you know, lackadaisical person. And you're the reason that you don't have a headliner, right? You know what I'm saying? Issa found a way. She was like, Molly was like, hey, I don't want to, you know, use my relationship capital on you. And that's fair. And that's okay. You know, Issa went around it and found a way to get what she needed to get.
Exactly.
Without you using that capital. And it still wasn't, it still didn't.
Still wasn't enough.
Yes. And so, you know, like I said, I watched the show to kind of engage more on social media so I can kind of follow. And listen, it's a good show, but I've never had that world to deal with. Like, I've never had friends like that. I've never been, and you know, listen, I was a young dad, right? Like, I never had that. That experience is lost on me.
Yeah.
It's inconsequential to me.
Yeah, yeah, because you had other shit to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. It's just very, and I think a lot of this also is, I mean, the show is obviously popular and it's done well since, well, it's season 4, I guess, or so now. So it's not like the show wasn't a hit. But I think with everything, we're seeing escalated intensity because of quarantining and people not having any other distractions right. of being able to do anything else. So whether it's this, whether it's Last Dance, whether it's something that happens on Twitter, whatever it is, it intensifies. It's intense, more intense. Even the verses, it's more intensified. The verses wouldn't probably be as big if people could go outside, because who's sitting home on a Saturday night and right. on a nice night to watch, you know, Nelly and Luda? If you could right. go out to dinner or go out to the movies or whatever, but again, everything is more intensified because of the circumstances. So I think that's also why we're seeing so much more intense chatter on Insecure, and it lasts now longer too. It goes from Sunday to like, that we're talking about this shit on like Wednesday. They'll still be going, yep. and you know, so this is very interesting. Wanted to mention Love and Hip Hop, Atlanta, because this episode was interesting in that they showed at the end of the episode was production shutting down based on the coronavirus and them telling like...
At the end of what episode?
This episode just passed.
Of Insecure?
No, Love and Hip Hop.
Oh, Love and Hip Hop, okay.
Love and Hip Hop, yeah, Monday. So it was very interesting, like they were coming in, like you talking to the town, like, yo, you got to take your mic off. We got to go right now. And the town is like, wait, what? What's going on? What's happening? You know, kind of did it in real time. I found that just kind of, you know, kind of interesting. The storyline was wild. It was like some fighting and all that crazy shit. But I just thought it was very interesting how they showed in real time that the shutdown was happening. And I don't know. Is there an episode this week, bro? Or do you know? Yeah. So I don't know.
Well, I will say, like, I don't know if you can play out like a regular seasonal storyline remotely, but the Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Yeah, I was about to go in. I was about to say that next. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but about that again, the Real Housewives of Atlanta had their reunion this week, and it was all on, I guess, you know, Zoom, for lack of a better term. So none of them in the same room. They're all in their houses in separate, you know, separate locales, and Andy is as well. To me, that actually made for a better episode. I think the fact that the women are away from each other kind of let them give less fucks even than they already do. Right. Because it's like, I could say some sick shit about Kenya, but she's sitting right next to me. Shit. Maybe I don't even want to say that.
I mean, they stopped their ass before.
But yeah, but to me, like, it was even more intense.
I think that's because it's harder. It was harder for Andy to wrangle because he's not with them.
He couldn't wrangle them at all.
Yeah, producers aren't there to step in, and you can't really. The best you can do if they're doing via Zoom, which I think they were, is mute everybody, which is not the same. You know,
it's not the same. Yeah, at one point, Nene just closed her laptop. You know,
because he was on defense from like minute two.
From the door, yeah. Like, so I thought it made for a more intense viewing of it. They were going ham. Like,
I couldn't get all the way through it because I got to go back and finish watching it because the deflection from Nene and Kenya, either time any one of them are called on their bullshit, and their immediate thing is like, well, what about the things that they've always said about
done to me?
So when Kenya was like, she said all these horrible things about my marriage. And Portia was like, you talk shit about everybody's marriage.
Yeah, until you got married.
Or when the writer was like, you've talked, or when the viewer who wrote in was like, you talk shit about everybody's marriage. Do you feel like that was karma? Yeah. And she was like, well, what about the things all these young ladies have said about me? And they were like, that's different than talking about
somebody's marriage.
You've attacked people's marriage. Like, all the, and King, and that's always Nene's thing. I said what I heard. We've all heard things and repeated it. I just repeated what I heard. And what about the way these ladies talk about me? Like, it's just, I was like, okay, my spirit can't do this right now.
Yeah, I didn't even watch. I had absolutely no desire. I think I haven't watched maybe like the last five episodes, six episodes. I mean, pretty much since we've been on quarantine, dude. Like,
you just checked out.
Yeah, man, I'm good.
There was one thing that I found interesting is that Kenya said that, they asked Kenya about how her and Mark are doing. She said that, she said it wrong, said Mark has made it 360, which meant 180. But she said that, and they're working it out, and he's, you know, they talk a lot, and he's very concerned. And I'm like,
maybe he did do a 360.
They came right back to the same spot. Exactly. Because my thing was like, okay, so if y'all are working, we all worked it out, and y'all are in this great place, then why the fuck is he not with y'all? He's still in New York.
I just believe maybe they haven't filed the paperwork yet.
Yeah, because I'm like, if a nigga's want to be with his family, then you get on the plane and be with your family. Like,
I'm not shooting.
You treat me like that on national motherfucking television, my nigga, we good.
I'm not shooting darts at them, but, like, are we sure that paperwork needed to be filed? Because
right.
Well, she showed it on the thing. She showed a marriage certificate on the thing Monday. Now, again, I don't know if it's, I'm not saying it was real or bootleg. And I ain't
you got that shit from Chilligan's Island, nigga, where right. Martin and Gina was.
They get it from the lady who could get things down around to the corner. You know what I'm saying?
Known to doctor legal documents. I remember one time she tried to take a picture of a judgment. Oh, the whole shit was handwritten. Like, there was not a typed. It was written on legal paper, and it was like, baby girl, this is not what judgments look like.
I'm saying that, but for all intents and purposes, right? Like, they were married, right? Like, that was not, you know what I'm saying? Even if it wasn't necessarily, you know, paperwork, you know, the understanding in which they both stepped into that was that they were in a committed marriage.
Yes. So I just found that interesting about, like, well, then if he's all, like, back in love with you and everything, then why the hell is a nigga in New York? You know, but anyway, so I just wanted to mention that. I want to mention Last Dance. This week is the last two episodes, 9 and 10. Every week, it's interesting with this thing. I think I said this last week, but like, it's interesting the way they did one of the ways they did this documentary, which is phenomenal. It's like every week the intensity ratchets up. Like every week, the episodes get more intense and more like revealing. It's so fly how they did it. Like, what's like you see, like, you know, week 4 and 5, 5 and 6, like, shit, it can't get no better than this. And then last week, this week just passed, was even better. Talking about Mr. Jordan's death, what that meant to Mike laughing about Gary Payton. And that's the other thing, that they find a way to stick humor into these docs, this doc too. And Jordan has become like the meme god. You know what I'm saying? Like he's like the meme god now. You know what I'm saying? Like every week there's a new Jordan meme with him looking at that iPod. But what'd you think about it?
I thought it was interesting, and I need to go back and watch both. This seems to happen to me all the time. I rarely, for some reason or another, am able to watch. Oh, I know what's happening. I'm watching 90 Day Fiance when it first came on. So I usually watch The Last Dance either later or Monday. Mm-hmm. And it somehow always happens that I'm trying to watch it while I'm working, so I always have to go back and watch it again. Two things that were interesting to me this week. One was, and maybe you guys can put in context because I probably missed some things. One was when Jordan got teary-eyed while talking about how hard he pushed his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
The other was, and I actually felt like this was too raw for us to even see in episode 7 after they won the championship, showing him sobbing on the locker room floor. That actually felt like an intrusion to me. I was like, we shouldn't be watching this.
Well, I'll do it with the second one first. Bro, I'll let you take the first one. The second one, which made that interesting, interesting might be too trite of a word, but what made that interesting is we've seen that footage before, Nye.
Okay.
But we never heard it.
The sobbing.
You never heard. You just saw him on the ground. This is the only time that they had the sound with
him. And that was like a gut.
Yeah, from the gut. Because he basically was holding the whole, mourning his father in for the whole season.
Yeah.
He held that shit in, and then it just bust out. Like which is why, I don't know if you noticed, when they won, he grabbed the ball, and other people were trying to grab the ball, and he was holding on to that motherfucker like, I'm going to kill one of you niggas if you take this ball from me. This is for my father. Like you said, and then, like I said, we've never heard the audio of him sobbing, which obviously takes it to a whole different place. And, it was intrusive. It was, but that he's such a big star that nobody thought of it being intrusive. It's just like, we got to get this on film. Meanwhile, you know, there was one attendant there trying to kind of, you know, hold him down, but that was with that, bro. What did you want to take the one about him crying about the teammates?
I mean, I can. I mean, you know, Mike, and we kind of talked about this a little bit last week, is that, you know, Mike is just cut from a different cloth. I think that there are lots of people who talk about, you know, winning at all costs, and they do it because it makes for great IG quotes. It makes for, you know, it's great on T-shirts.
Right.
But I don't necessarily know that they do everything that is necessary to be done to be a winner. And I think that Mike, again, it is so foreign to him that you are not willing to fucking have your toes bleed or to make the level of sacrifice that he feels is necessary. Now, look, I also think Mike's an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Like, unrelenting asshole. And he has made peace with that being his way of getting his teammates to buy into it. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, I think that this is a generational divide. When you take a look at a kid who is, and this is why I was saying that the most interesting thing about this documentary is that it doesn't make him look like a bad guy. What it does is it actually gives color and context to his behavior.
Yeah, humanizes.
And it gives you all of the things that you kind of thought were missing, and you realize that this is all about a dude who just doesn't understand not working hard. I did not know his father built the second floor of their fucking house.
I didn't know that built either.
So I was listening
Built the second floor of a house.
Like, I was listening to the, so there's a podcast, The After Show, where they had the director on. And the director talked about, you know, this is obviously something that's probably going to be on a cutting room floor. But if you remember earlier on in the doc, his father is being quoted as saying, you know, I would be with Larry in the garage and I would say, hand me the screwdriver. So clearly his dad.
He said Michael wouldn't know nothing about a screwdriver or a
wouldn't know nothing about that, right? Mm-hmm. So this had become, you know what I'm saying, sort of his thing. But I'm just saying that fight and that drive to kind of get your dad's approval and to get what you felt like was his appreciation, you know, you can see it. He is not cut like everyone else. But that guy is very different because that generation comes under men like that. So that harsh tongue was how we were motivated. His dad says, I sent them inside with his mama. Right? So you know what that meant.
Yeah.
We know what that meant, right? Yeah. We understood what that meant. And so, yeah, that kind of guy is going to drive. But then there are other people who are more like Magic, who their managerial style is much more free. It's much more encouraging. It's much more engaging. It's not berating. You know what I'm saying? And that's part of why Scotty was also looked at as a fucking terrible teammate when he went elsewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Michael wasn't around.
And very selfish and all that. Yeah.
Scotty didn't get rave reviews. You know what I'm saying? But there was never a point where anyone could say Scotty didn't work.
No.
Because he got that shit from Mike.
Yeah, he didn't come in shape and all that type of shit.
So Scott, I think it's interesting to watch him, you know, talk about those things. And I think he doesn't want to be seen as that because the culture that we live in now is very different. And these things are viewed through a different prism.
Yeah.
And I think that it is, I wouldn't say it's unfair to him because you can only grow up in the time that you're born in, right? But I think that
Jordan's always been, like, I mean, I get it. There's a new generation of people who are watching this doc, and I do also wonder what it means for. I was also saying that it's curious to me. You know, Jordan has never, for as much as Jordan was with his dad publicly, Jordan has never had his family. Like, his dad was very public. His kids were never that public and still aren't. And maybe it's because, like, his dad got killed and maybe he's trying to protect his kid. Like, I don't know. But I think that if you know any, even Jordan lore, even if you didn't grow up watching Jordan, like, it's like Kobe work ethic times 1,000, you know what I mean? And so I guess that's what struck me as interesting, that any part of him would now feel a way about being viewed like that. 'Cause dude, that's like part of your your legacy.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, wanting to be the top dog and doing the things that you think requires you to be the top dog at 30 aren't necessarily the things that you think about when you're 53.
Fair.
And you're, and I think that he has aged a bit, and I think that the one thing he is he's incredibly conscious about what people say about him by, you know, not ever talking to Sports Illustrated again after they
did it.
He reads everything. He takes all of that in. He takes every slight. He keeps score like no other. And y'all know me, nigga. I keep a score. I keep a running tab. Okay.
There's some of y'all motherfuckers out there. Sean don't like y'all at all. For since he did it in 2012.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely, nigga. And I'm keeping that one.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, we and Jeff kind of went back and forth a little bit about this with the doc and the family, the kids and I guess Juanita not being in there.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the filmmaker says they were not central to the story.
Mm.
And I'm not going to say that that's not fair. What I will say is that other family members that aren't necessarily central to the story are in the story.
Yeah.
He also said he did talk to them. Now they might just he's saying he did, but they might just end up on the cutting room floor.
Okay, I didn't know.
With that said, I will always like to say Mike is an EP on this.
Oh yeah.
And you are not making a unilateral decision whether to either put his children in there or take his children out without some level of talking to, you know,
Mike,
his people, you know what I'm saying? Or even his people. And
his
agent,
and
I think much like Isaiah, much like the shit with Isaiah, there's a lot of things that go on that, you know, people do based on the fact that they know that this can sever the relationship, i.e. the Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
Right. If I go against him here,
I'm never talking to me again.
I'm pretty sure his kids aside, I'm pretty sure Juanita ain't want no parts of this shit. Like, Juanita has been
A lot of Juanita's been low pretty much since they got divorced. She's been low. Yeah.
Well, she was low when they was married.
Yeah, true.
Like, that's not, this ain't really a bag.
Juanita could have walked up to me on the street. I wouldn't have known who the fuck.
Yeah.
But I was mentioning that as the undercurrent and the meat, the spine of this is how difficult it was to be Michael Jordan.
Right.
And I do think it is fair to have his children or his wife at the time and the people that were sort of intimately involved with him. You know, Ahmad, those are his fucking running buddies. We know, right. You know, those are his golf buddies. Those are people he's hanging out with. Those people he's fucking with. But what happens when the lights was off?
Yeah, exactly.
And everything was down and it was just him. And again, I'm not looking for anything salacious.
Right.
I think it would have just added a little more context.
A little more flavor to it.
Yeah, I think just like talking about his father's influence on him is relevant, I think talking about who he was at home. So we're talking about how hard he pushed people on the court. Was he that kind of father? Was he that, you know what I mean? Did he turn it off when he got home?
Did he turn, exactly. Did you know, he, like, was it? Was there a switch? Was he always like this? Was this some of the things? And listen, Mike has never uttered a bad word about Juanita.
And
her to him. You know what I'm saying? So this is not anybody. I'm not.
Yeah, nobody looking for
a shade room post.
Exactly. Okay? Exactly.
None of that. You know, these are 50-something year old. Their kids are grown.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, they're real grown.
Yeah. So no one's saying that. I was just simply saying, I think it's very weird. You don't do a documentary on, you know, any public person like that, and you don't do a documentary on Bill Cosby and not try to talk.
That's
to Camille.
Right. Yeah,
that's just not. You know, you don't. You know.
Yeah. So I mean, they talked about the baseball.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Cosby. Let me correct that.
Exactly. We talked sidebar. I say this every week, but Michael Jordan's mom is not aging at all. Like, they showing her like in the 90s, and then they show her now, and she literally looks exactly the same. She looks amazing.
Because she eats pork every morning, I promise you.
Put me a little bacon in that pan. You know I like
pork. And she got a can of Crisco on the back of the stove. Yep.
She takes her nightly tea with a little medicine in it.
Exactly.
Now I'm telling you, that pork fat keeps black skin from getting dried and wrinkled.
Oh my God. My
great grandmother lived to 102. She ate it every day. Skin was flawless.
Mrs. Jordan, you look amazing. And clear as a bell. Clear as a bell. Like remembering everything.
She was a school teacher.
Oh, you know, I get that. I get that energy. Now that you say that,
She was a school teacher, I think, or something. No, I'm sorry. She wasn't a school teacher. My apologies. She worked in the banks. Okay. She was always, like, you can tell she's very clear. Yes, you can tell.
Professional, on point.
Speaking to people is nothing to her. Like, you can do that all day.
All day.
She was definitely up at the school.
At all the PTA meetings. At all the PTA meetings. The baseball thing, the baseball part was very interesting too. And there was just a little thing that nobody ever really focused on, but I love that aerial shot of the church and the cemetery, because that's down south, old school, right, where Mr. Jordan was buried. I'm like, Michael Jordan's a billionaire, and I'm not saying this to be negative, and his father's buried in a cemetery.
That's where they people are.
And that's one place are. Mr. Jordan was going to be buried, because this is my uncle, this is my brother.
And you got to have a service at the home church.
At the home where church.
Where the pastor knows you.
From the time you're born.
Ain't no newfangled fancy. No.
Bible's tatted.
If you ain't a member, you ain't coming in here.
them hymnals is tatted. You know the everybody know the words anyway, so it don't matter.
They got the hymn book, the thing up on the wall with the hymn number in there. Offering for the day.
Word. the old wooden table with the communion stuff. I love that. It's like, he's still a country boy at heart, you know.
Speaking of that. My man code switches like a motherfucker.
He really does.
Yo, because we've always only gotten Jordan on.
Yeah. Right.
And you can hear the country in his ass the moment he's off. It's like the moment he pops the tab on that beer.
He's Michael from Wilmington.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he Mike from Wilmington. You know what I'm saying? Talking shit. I wanted to end it with the show with Ahmaud Arbery, and the arrests were made this week past.
And we already have a new
case. Yeah, I actually was going to hold off and talk about Breonna until next week, because I want to get more information.
Yeah.
But hopefully there'll be arrests by the time we tape again.
Right.
This case is interesting to me for obvious reasons, but also because already the guy who taped the murder is like, I don't know them. I wasn't with them. I taped it, and don't put me in the box with them. He's been on CNN with his lawyer and everything, saying like, I'm not part of none of this shit. Like, do not. They're already like running for the hills away from these two guys. I think these two guys are going to get life. I saw a thing where I don't know if it was the governor of Georgia, maybe it was the head of the GBI. Somebody said that they arrested them because they didn't want to riot. Once the tape got out, it was that we had to arrest them because we were scared to have a race riot in Georgia. So they're looking at these guys. First of all, they deserve it anyway. They're fucking both pieces of shit. But they're also looking at them as they're sacrificing them at this point. Like, y'all did this shit. Y'all dumb enough to take the shit. And fuck y'all. Justice will be served.
We'll see. But,
we'll see. You still skeptical?
The thing now is that, so, you know, the story had been that there were some robberies reported in the neighborhood, and that's why they went after him, which the police department said was not true. There were no robberies. But there was video that he was inside of a house that was under construction, but he was inside of it. Even the people who own the house said that there was nothing tampered with, nothing stolen.
Yeah.
He was inside of it the way I've done this before.
When you just kind of looking around.
Yeah, you walk past a space that's under construction when, you know, and it's wide open. Like, there's not like you have to knock anything down or do anything. And you just want to look around. Like, what's the floor plan?
What's it look like?
All he was doing, he didn't really touch nothing.
He was there for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
He was there for like 5 minutes. And like I said, the guy that owns the property was like, nothing was misplaced. Nothing was stolen. I didn't even think to call no police. He said, other people have walked in here too. Right. Like, it's not weird, you know? So yeah. Everything that they're trying to do to soil Ahmad is going left. Yes. Yeah, so I'm happy. What you guys need to say about this, bro?
I want to see what happens here. Yes, because there are a lot of statutes in Georgia, and then a lot of these I wouldn't necessarily red states. Yeah, you know, these open carry states and these sort of states with these lax gun laws really do have a lot of, you know, laws that kind of deputize people to some level. And I just don't know. You know, we've seen enough of these cases, and we've seen enough people walk away from these cases, either found not guilty or, you know, basically, you know, getting, you know, months in jail, you know, basically no time served, whatever, to be skeptical. And I'm skeptical because the meat and potatoes of this case was that it was done. The DA had already, you know, listed three or four different laws on the books that he felt confident in not arresting them. Obviously, what transpired or what was told was not the case. When you look at the video, you kind of get it paints a different picture for sure.
Yes.
And I'm not 100% sure that, not even 100% sure, that guy that was following them was definitely following them. He was definitely with them, and he's definitely trying to pretend as though he was going. He didn't want any parts of that. Yeah. Yes, the reality was he more than likely thought, based on the statutes, based on the laws, based on his interpretations, that they were definitely in the right, and this was going to actually help them.
Right.
You think the tape was going to exonerate them. Like, oh, yeah, he attacked them first.
I think they did release it thinking somehow. I don't know how they could think that. Maybe because he struggled for the gun. I think this is what I think. I think they thought that because he struggled for the gun, they were in the right. Except the problem with that is that that would suggest that you had precedence and authority to chase him down with a gun in the first place.
But that's the thing. If based on the statute that the original DA pulled out, he's saying that, you know, he put, you know, I don't speak lawyer, but when I read the statement, he basically laid out the defense. So whomever his defense attorney, they got less work than anybody, because all they really got to do is, you know, pick up the legwork from what they've already laid out for them. So I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. If you told me to bank on this, this is definitely going to be some shit that goes to a jury. Where do you get a jury that's not going to be
biased?
You know, not biased. Does this shit get moved to some other place or some other location that's going to be more generous to having, you know, white males on the jury? I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, we literally watched four cops beat the dog shit out of Rodney King.
Yeah. Sean Bell too, all that shit. Yeah,
Sean Bell. You know, everything. They still never found the gun Sean Bell had, right? Like that. Yeah. That they claimed he had. So I'm in a wait and see kind of mode. I listened to a podcast where I guess the reporter from the Times had kind of gone to the property,
mm-hmm.
and I guess the wife was there.
Okay.
Basically, she called the cops. And basically told dude, you know, I'm armed, and if you trespass, I'm letting this chopper sink.
I'm letting this thing, I'm letting it go.
And he was like, the tension is crazy. It's like, it's real thick over there, as it should be. And, you know, it kind of is what it is at this point. I don't, you know, I don't have any more. I don't have a lot of energy about these things.
I got you, because it happens so much, yeah. So we'll keep an eye on that. Like I said, we'll talk about Breonna Taylor next week. Yeah, so that's it. I'm going to wrap it up. Stay safe. Stay indoors as much as you can. Shelter in place. Wash your hands. Wash your nasty-ass hands. Yeah, and be careful out there. We'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.